Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea. I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. Our mission is simple. We're searching for beneficial disruption in healthcare from emerging technologies. I'm really pleased today. My guest is Ike Carpenter. Ike's career reflects a focus that includes technology, healthcare, and creative approaches to addressing complex problems. He's the founder of Care Change, with the explicit goal of leveraging blockchain technology to address the opioid crisis. Good day to you, Ike, and thanks for joining us so much.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
If you would, tell us a little bit about your past involvement in healthcare and technology.
Sure. I've been around the healthcare technology space since the late 80s, and we started a company that was a startup of mine called MicroEDS, later got changed, name got changed to CellaQuest, because there was a company with EDS name already that decided that they didn't want us to, as we got successful and became visible, they didn't like the idea that we were using EDS in our name. But at any rate, the focus at that time was to support the sales efforts of pharma, and that we would support sales reps with tools to improve physician communication, direct marketing tools. We did a lot to support conferences with lead capture experiences, taking those leads, aligning them to the appropriate sales reps, distributing them, and then tracking closure on them. And then we physician web portals, patient education delivered to them via the providers that they trusted. So that was the start over up through 2009, and then in 2000, and most recently, and it was a director of technology strategy and innovations at ODH Solutions. So that kind of bookends my experience that there. It was really, we focused on healthcare analytics. The first was segmenting populations based on impactability, risk, cost, and disease states, and then aligning those segments to programs that would be targeted to address those needs and tracking participation and outcomes. Another thing that we did at ODH was predicting incoming gaps in care so they could be closed before they occurred. And this was designed to improve quality scores and most importantly, improving patient outcomes.
Sure, continuity of care and avoid those gaps when they occur, that's a critical thing. Well, somewhere in this process, you heard the word distributed ledger technology, the phrase, or the word blockchain, and that sparked your interest. Tell me when you first heard about blockchain and when the light bulb went off and you thought maybe there was some potential there.
Yeah, sure. I've always taken a business first approach and then found and leveraged technology to address the business's needs. And so it ranged back from the first CRM system we built for Genentech. We built that in assembler to the artificial intelligence that we applied to create a platform to direct Shire's telesales reps to identify the most impactful targets and point them to the most impactful tactics for each targeted physician. And I was looking for a way to share the insights into upcoming gaps in care that I mentioned earlier. We were delivering these to payers, and of course the providers are the ones that are going to do the yeoman's work in closing those gaps. And so it was how can we find a way to share the insights that we're giving to payers with the providers that are going to close those gaps? And that's so in the late summer of 2017, I started looking at blockchain.
Well, and that kind of brings us to the entity that you founded called Care Change, and that's C-A-R-E. C-A-I-N-G-E. I really like that, Care Change. A very complex problem really probably worldwide, but we're certainly very aware of the opioid crisis here. The gaps in knowledge and in education and how these medications should be taken, the risk to people who are prescribed these medications, follow-up treatment, all kind of different things. And so tell me a little bit about your motivations to be the founder of Care Change and how that's evolved and what you're hoping Care Change will be able to do to address at least some of the issues, complex issues around the opioid crisis.
Sure. Well, I think I'm not alone when I say that, you know, I've been personally impacted by the opioid crisis. So there's those of us that, well, we all probably know somebody either very close to us or a friend who is dealing with or knows people that are dealing with issues around opioid abuse, addiction, and withdrawal and recovery. And, you know, they say when you pursue your purpose and you're not, it's not work. And this certainly is a labor of love. But the goal really for Care Change is to make a positive impact on the opioid crisis by powering a readily accessible marketplace, if you will, of proven solutions that prevent opioid addiction, treat withdrawal, and support lifelong recovery. You know, there's a lot of solutions out there, and they don't all work, or they don't always work for everybody. And so if we can create this readily available marketplace of solutions, then we'll have a good start. And then connect those existing programs or interventions to a platform that will capture and reward participation. And then we'll also track outcomes, and we'll make those that participation and outcomes transparent and publicly available. And when I say programs or interventions, I am including things ranging from patient education to provider education, mindfulness, devices for perhaps maybe pain management or DBT interventions, counseling, pharmaceuticals, and more. And when we talk about connecting the data there, the whole idea is to make it very, very easy for these programs to connect to the platform.
Well, you know, you mentioned most folks have some personal connection to this opioid crisis, and one thing that I have seen is, you know, we talk about addiction, and in our mind's eye, we see somebody on methamphetamine or 20 years ago, crack cocaine or some down and outers. But I've seen situations where nurses who may be in their 60s who have never abused anything in their life, and they injure their ankle, they're put on opioids, and within a month they're addicted to opioids. So they're not not the classical addiction that we kind of think of. And so to me, that insidious nature of it is really a threat across the board. I don't know the statistics, but go ahead. You were going to say something.
No, I was just going to say you're absolutely right, and we don't know who is predisposed necessarily, although there are tools to help gain some additional information into that. So, as you point out, you can become addicted to opioids within 5 days, which is amazing, and there's a lot of things that we can do around pharmacogenetics to identify those that might be predisposed to abusing substances and that might have a poor metabolism of the opioid molecules or chemicals, the medications that require different kinds of dosing, et cetera. And I just met with a company last week that does genetic testing to identify individual's particular areas of risk around certain kind of medications or certain kind of predisposition to substance abuse. And we are talking about connecting the individual's high-level information about the individual's genetics and predispositions to the Care Change platform as well. So knowing ahead of time those that are at risk or those that need to be monitored or those that might require even a higher dose because they metabolize the opioid much quicker is great information to have before you actually embark on any kind of treatment. And I know that one of the big things for the Cleveland Clinic for 2019 is to leverage pharmacogenetics to identify exactly what is talking about the those at opioid risk and come up with other alternative pain management approaches.
You know, we used to talk about personalized medicine, but now with genomics involved, and it's really kind of morphed over to precision medicine, whether it's antibiotics or pain relief substances, things like that. And we're really on the cusp of that, and it may well be, who knows when that will become a reality, where prescribing providers will have access to that kind of data about which antibiotics or which pain relief substances should be prescribed. It's certainly on the path forward, and we'll get there one day. Whether it's going to be 3 years or 15 years, it's kind of hard to say. You mentioned three different areas. The first was preventing addiction, and so certainly precision medicine, seeing how somebody, based on their genomic makeup, responds to these different medications. Is there any true potential in when people are prescribed these medications, how they're educated around them, the risk of them? I mean, how is that being dealt with, the educational piece?
Yeah, and there's two sides to that. One is educating the individual who's being prescribed the medication, and the second is educating the prescribers themselves. You'll hear stories where for a tooth extraction, somebody might get prescribed opioids, and instead of a five-day supply, they're prescribed 30 days. And, this is just because of lack of awareness or understanding on that part of the prescriber. The interesting thing is, until we actually can implement some of these education programs and track participation and outcomes in them, it's hard to say, you know, which kinds of educational programs will have the most the greatest impact. One of the programs that we're is first on the Care Change platform is going to be a program that educates patients at the time that they first get prescribed an opioid by providing a series of daily videos over their 30 seconds each, sharing the risks of opioid abuse. And we'll track the participation by the individuals in those programs and reward them when they complete the program. We'll look and see, did we get the outcomes that we hope to achieve? And we'll look at those outcomes in two ways. We use some patient-reported outcomes, and we can also use pharmacy claims outcomes to see whether indeed they were prescribed a subsequent prescription. And if they were, then you know maybe that might indicate that they're in the process of either they need it or they're in the process of maybe starting to go down that path of abuse. So again, we don't know specifically which ones work per se, but by getting them into the platform to track activity as an outcomes, we can certainly hopefully identify them.
You mentioned talking with some folks last week, and as I've had my earlier conversations with you, you're certainly talking with quite a few different potential partners in this space. Where is Care Change in the process? Is it still a visioning process? Have you started forming partnerships? When do you anticipate launching the initial platform? Where are you in all that?
So the first part for us was to make sure that they, from a voice of customer out there, that we were able to align and recruit the suppliers of programs and interventions. And because without that, there's no value to be delivered. And we've done that. And we've got an education provider, as I mentioned. We've got a mindfulness solution provider. We've got an outcomes company that tracks outcomes and activities of daily living, a medical device for reducing pain during the withdrawal process, and then, as I mentioned, this genetics company. Now that we've got that, we've been talking with development partners and trying to decide which partner we want to go with. There's a lot of interest there, we've already defined the solution, so we'll be very efficient to execute on that vision. But you know, one of the things about the whole distributed ledger environment is that while there's technology issues that have to be addressed, those aren't the biggest challenges. The biggest challenges are making sure that you create the partnerships that are going to enable us and sustain a relationship going forward. So we will, in the next probably week to 10 days, have decided on a development partner, and we'll have a working prototype, if you will, up with the education program on it and the mindfulness program on it probably within 6 to 8 weeks.
Well, that's great. And so there seems to be a number of extremely passionate people involved with addressing the opioid crisis. I've been to some conferences and heard some speakers, and most have been touched on some personal level or through their family or other relationships. And there seems to be a real passion around people working on addressing this opioid crisis. I imagine you've interacted with quite a few of those people, and they're the ones you're kind of getting some input from, not so much as business partners, but just as mission partners, I guess, for lack of a better phrase.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's no shortage of people who have been impacted by the opioid crisis, and yeah. Those that have been are from the vast majority of those that I've met. As a matter of fact, I can't even think of any exceptions. Realize that we can't continue with business as usual. We've got to come up with a solution, and we've all contributed to creating the problem. Whether it's payers from a utilization management perspective, and not being necessarily willing to pay for the genetic testing I mentioned earlier, which could hopefully prevent some issues. Or prevent some issues. And by the way, I'm not trying to badmouth anybody here, but I'm just trying to identify how we've all contributed. Providers who, as I mentioned earlier, might overprescribe, and individuals themselves who don't educate themselves around the risk, or decide that maybe this is a nice recreational drug, and then all of a sudden it becomes too late. We've all contributed to it, to the problem. So we all need to contribute to the solution, and that's why creating this platform that is transparent and available to all, and where everybody plays a role. I'm hoping that will help move the needle.
One thing I've noticed over the last couple of years is I've paid attention to blockchain, in particular. Healthcare use cases. Frequently, the use cases have to do with improving efficiency in particular areas, whether it is existing processes like supply chain or reimbursement, things like that. But using that distributed nature of blockchain technology to improve efficiencies. I'm also seeing the rise of use cases similar as care change, where it's not really an existing process that is trying to be improved upon, but because of the underlying foundational benefits of blockchain, new things can be done that were not possible before. And so I guess that brings me to the question of what functionality does blockchain bring to care change that could not be achieved before with traditional technology and databases? Are you a token-based marketplace, or you know, what does blockchain bring that you couldn't have done this 5 years ago?
Sure, sure. Well, you know, I think, you know, our goal is to create that a platform that's easy for program suppliers to connect to, and easy for individuals to, and organizations to trust the information that's being captured and reported. And, you know, if you work, you leverage existing technologies that are out there, it's possible to create a distributed ledger solution to provide the things that are inherent within the blockchain, things like, you know, data immutability, security, and anonymity, having the data spread amongst multiple ledgers so there's no central point of attack or abuse, distributing the processing, and you mentioned also built-in reward mechanisms. I mean, you can build that all with traditional technology, but once you've done that, you've created a distributed ledger technology. So our thought is, look, by tapping into this distributed ledger technology that already exists, whether it's Hyperledger, which is one thing we're considering, or whether it's Enterprise Ethereum or Quorum, which is an iteration on that, we'll be able to tap into the development sources, resources that are readily available as well. So it's an idea of, you know, no sense reinventing the wheel with traditional technology if it's already available through the technology that exists. And the types of things that we're doing here are very, I don't want to say they're simplistic, but they're not easily executable within the framework of a distributed ledger technology because it's already built inherent in that technology.
You know, I think the what you're working on, opioid crisis, and however you are approach it from technological aspects and dynamics, I would think organizations like the CDC would be interested in a novel approach.
Yes, actually, you're right. You're right. And I've had a pleasure of speaking with folks at the CDC. A matter of fact, we're in the conversations around leveraging their video technology for that education program. And I know Tom Savelle, their chief technology officer, who's a wonderful man and somebody who really is committed to patient care and outcomes. While he doesn't head up their opioid efforts, he is committed to to solving the problem, and he's been very helpful in helping me navigate the CDC.
I would think that the pharmaceutical industry also would be interested in supporting any efforts to combat this. Have you had any contacts with people in the pharmaceutical industry that are interested or anything along those lines? I would think that, you know, just some it certainly, as they would say, a good karma for them to do, but also good press relations for them to do, because they've always kind of been pointed out as the bad boy and all this kind of stuff. What are your thoughts around that?
I agree. And for both reasons, as you mentioned, it's the right thing to do. And also it can be good business because if they, you know, if they're providing solutions and providing the right solutions to the right target audiences, they will end up with better outcomes and they'll end up with better, better reimbursement, et cetera. And to answer your question about have we started talking with, we have not yet talked with anyone on the pharmaceutical side, although because of my background, I've got a lot of relationships there. We do have a partner around devices, a device that's used to reduce pain manage pain during the terrible withdrawal process. And so we're getting started in those through that in that particular segment of our partnering strategy.
If someone wants to find out more about Care Change and what you're doing, and what's the best way they can contact you and bring you ideas and discuss things with you?
Great. Sure. They can reach, go out to the website at www.carechange.com, carechinge.com, or they can reach out directly to me at ike@carechange.com.
Okay. That's great. And I was at the HIMSS conference a couple of weeks ago in Orlando. I didn't have a chance to meet with you there, but I believe you were there. Did you see some that the whole blockchain healthcare infrastructure is starting to evolve, where there's some really good tools out there, and you see that as being supportive of your efforts? What were your impressions of HIMSS?
Absolutely. You know, it's you mentioned HIMSS, and I think that's a great kind of arc of the industry for around blockchain. You know, in 2017, there was a lot of hype around the technology, and a lot of one of the big things they were talking about a lot was around security. And then 2018, there was a lot more, you know, hype around technology and ICOs, initial coin offerings. But we started at that point to see some use cases being introduced. And then this last year in 2019, there was a lot less focus on the technology on the front end. It was almost more like that was kind of in the background, and very little about ICOs, and many more use cases. And there was even some positive results that were shared from early use cases. So I think what we're seeing is that there's a much more focus on the business needs and the use cases to solve those needs. And there's also solutions that are being built that essentially create a blockchain as a service or distributed ledger technology as a service, which so you don't have to spend all your time or a lot of your time building the infrastructure, the DevOps approach to setting up the servers and the nodes, et cetera. There are some great services available through AWS and Azure. And Consensus has built a wonderful platform called Kaleido.
Yep.
And there's others that are being built out there that are, again, make it possible to focus really on the business that that you're doing, rather than focused on all of the infrastructure, which is tends to be a big effort. There's an interesting company which is available at personaldigitalspaces.com that is also doing something like Kaleido, that's setting up environment that makes it possible to stay at the business level when you're building out these solutions. It's really pretty cool stuff.
Well, we're totally out of time. It just blew past us. I'd like to first thank my audience for joining us today on this episode of the Take Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest, Ike Carpenter of Care Change. Ike, thanks for coming aboard today.
Jim, thank you very much for this opportunity to share what we're doing.
Yep, thank you. You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.